This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
It's the Daily Digest on the Bigger Picture with Tina Camilla Lim Soo and Sumitra Selvaraj. If you've just joined us, today is World Suicide Prevention Day. That was for our first story.
And in our next story, we are asking you on Twitter, do you think Robert Mugabe was an evil dictator or revolutionary hero? So you can share any thoughts you have about his mixed legacy with us. You can tweet us at BFM Radio. You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899. Or you can also call us at 03-773-2900.
So my answer to your question, Suan, as to whether he's a revolutionary hero or whether he's an evil dictator is really he's a bit of both. And depending on who you ask, he's either one.
And for 37 years, Robert Mugabe was Zimbabwe.
He was.
But before he was born, that country still did not exist. So he was the son of a carpenter in southern Rhodesia, a self-governed British crown colony. So Mugabe was part of the majority black race, which numbered more than 6 million people. Mm-hmm. However, power and privilege was reserved for the quarter of a million white who established minority rule. So the black Rhodesians were mainly farmers, but they had their prime land taken from them and forced into the more inhospitable peripheries of the country, where the land was arid and difficult to farm. So this injustice was said to have sparked in Mugabe a need to restore the balance and fight for the rights of his countrymen.
And as a young adult, he worked as a teacher in Ghana, which was among the first countries south of the Sahara to gain independence from the British. Encouraged by this, he returned home and began campaigning to end discrimination and gathered quite a few supporters along the way, thanks to his firm stance and bravery. His efforts landed him in jail for 11 years, in fact, after he was convicted of sedition. Bolstered by his fiery nature and insistence on speaking up, Mugabe's supporters wrested control of ZANU, the biggest party fighting white rule, and installed him as leader while he was still in prison.
Pretty impressive, eh?
And the other thing that happened while Mugabe was in prison was the spread of guerrilla warfare. So African nationalists who were tired of white minority rule set up paramilitary groups, and they started to create unrest. So not to say that there wasn't unrest within the guerrillas themselves. The infighting alone was enough for Mugabe to realise that in order to wrest power, he will have to join the guerrilla war.
So as soon as he was released from prison, that's exactly what he did. He spent 2 years in exile in the neighboring Mozambique. But Mugabe himself didn't focus on the day-to-day fighting. He had able enough second-in-commands for that. I believe one of them was called the Crocodile. What Robert Mugabe did instead was he waged the propaganda war through radio broadcasts and regular speeches. He was quite the speaker. And he didn't mince words when it came to overthrowing the government and openly calling for violence against a white minority. In fact, in a 1978 radio broadcast, Mugabe declared, "Let us hammer the white man to defeat. Let us blow up his citadel. Let's give him no time to rest. Let us chase him in every corner. Let us rid our home of the settler vermin."
And his words came to fruition in 1980. Bowing to regional nationalistic pressure, elections were called. Robert Mugabe's party won the election and he was installed as prime minister. In one of his first public speeches post-win, he announced that Rhodesia would be renamed Zimbabwe and that he was committed to national unity and stability. And that also meant that the rights of the white minority would be protected.
For a little while, it looked like he was keeping his word. Under Mugabe's leadership, there was massive expansion in education, especially in health spending. I mean, think about this, right? In 1980, Zimbabwe had 177 secondary schools. By 2000, this number had risen to 1,548. During that period, adult literacy rose from 62% to 82%, making it one of the highest in the African continent. Levels of child immunization were raised from 25% of the population to 92%.
I think better than the US.
There you go. And yet, why did it all go so wrong? Okay. And in order to answer that, perhaps we can first take a look at how it all went wrong. Here's a snippet from a TED Talk by Ghanaian entrepreneur and leadership development expert, Fred Swanaker, who draws a very clear analogy.
You become the president of the United States. You think, wow, I've arrived. I'm the most powerful man in the world. So you decide, perhaps let me pass a law. All of a sudden, Congress taps you on the shoulder and say, no, you can't do that. You say, let me try this way. The Senate comes and says, we don't think you can do that. You say, perhaps let me print some money. I think the economy needs a stimulus. The central bank governor will think you're crazy. You might get impeached for that. But if you become the president of Zimbabwe, and you say, you know, I really like this job. I think I'd like to stay in it forever. Well, you just can. You decide you want to print money. You call the central bank governor and say, please, double the money supply. He'll say, okay, yes, sir. Is there anything else I can do for you? This is the power that African leaders have.
So what Fred Swanaker meant in his TED Talk is that when countries have strong institutions, and this by this I mean the Constitution, the judiciary and civil society, the changes that a leader can make are limited. But when you have weak institutions, a leader can make or break the country depending on what his or her personal values are.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, and in the case of Robert Mugabe, it's not that the central bank alone was weak in allowing him to print money willy-nilly.
Absolutely.
It's just that they were not backed up by the judiciary to curb the president's powers. Mm. So yes, he was the prime minister for the first 7 years of his rule. And then in late
1980,
yes. Yeah. Zimbabwe's parliament, led by, you know, who amended the constitution.
Amended the constitution. I love how easily this is done.
Yeah, it's just a piece of paper, yes. Sumitra. So on 30th of December, it declared Mugabe to be executive president, a new position that basically combined the roles of head of state, head of government, and commander-in-chief of the armed forces. Basically, he had absolute power.
Yep.
Yeah. This position gave him the power to dissolve parliament, declare martial law, and run for an unlimited number of terms. And again, we come back to the strength of institutions.
It's exactly like Suan said earlier. Robert Mugabe was Zimbabwe. Mm. Zimbabwe was Robert Mugabe.
Indeed.
Yeah. And, you know, because of that gross abuse of power and corruption that then happened, you're likely to have forgotten the facts that we shared just minutes ago, right? 177 secondary schools to over 1,500. Adult literacy from 62% to 82%. Child immunization up to 92%. Mm. All of this is completely wiped out.
But why would you not remember those facts when there are other facts that bubble to the surface? So according to an article in The Vox, Mugabe presided over the complete and total collapse of a nation. So starvation, disease and brutality, these were the legacies of Mugabe's one-man rule. Diseases like tuberculosis, HIV, malaria, they spread like wildfire. Cholera fatality rates were 10 times the global norm. Hospitals ran out of medicine. International donors were driven away by rampant corruption and inefficiency. A quarter of the population fled the country.
And here's what I mean by a mixed legacy, right? Mm. Despite all of this, this was a man who was celebrated by African politicians and, dare I say it, some global politicians as well, right? Mugabe was head of the African Union, president of the Southern Africa Development Community. Briefly, in a rather terrible PR move, he was a goodwill ambassador for the World Health Organization before public outcry forced a retraction of the title. And, you know, in light of this mixed legacy, because of this mixed legacy, Zimbabwe is preparing for a state funeral at the end of this week as his family members travel to Singapore to bring his body home. So, I don't know, what do you think, man or monster?
It's really hard to say. I remember covering the news of him being elected Goodwill Ambassador for the WHO in 2017. Lee Chui Lin and I, we were doing the Health News Digest. We were celebrating the fact that the WHO had the first African Secretary General for WHO.
Yes.
And when it was his first major move. It was to elect this very polarizing figure as Goodwill Ambassador. And it was just... The reaction was immediate, right? Most people were just unhappy with it. So I feel like, yeah, he is a very polarizing character. I mean, in his early years as prime minister, I think he had goodwill, no pun intended, but I think power corrupts.
And you can understand, right, you know, when you look at his upbringing and you look at his childhood in white minority rule, where the black farmers were treated so unfairly, you can see why that controversial decision that he made later in his by that time presidency came about, where the land grab happened, where they took land back from white farmers and really displaced hundreds of thousands, 700,000 people were ultimately displaced. And I can understand that there must have been a deep-rooted sense of frustration in him. But, you know, you can't just get rid of 700,000 people in your country and not expect the economy to collapse, not when they came with the majority power and privilege.
Yeah, this eye for an eye thing is, I don't know. I don't agree with that approach most of the time, which is basically what, I mean, I would say like that was what he was attempting to do.
He was. And which kind of begs the question, right? And I was having a discussion with my husband about it this morning. He works in leadership development. And he was saying to me, what's wrong with the idea of a dictator? What's really, he said, I can understand the idea that an evil dictator is a bad person.
But a benevolent one.
How about a dictator that's required a strong character with good values who can help lift people to a better socioeconomic standing? Isn't that better than having a situation where you have strong leadership, equally strong institutions, and everybody's at loggerheads and nothing happens? Like in India, for example, where nothing moves, you know? So I understand. I understand that Robert Mugabe is loved and reviled. The comments that I saw on social media post his demise were a little bit troubling, in the sense that, you know, there were a lot of people kind of celebrating his death, and I can understand that completely. I wonder whether everybody realizes that he did some good things as well. I'm not saying it in defense of him. But everybody has two sides.
I think it's just difficult, isn't it? It's just this word dictator has been so heavily associated with bad things. So when you think dictator, like I think like you said, Sumitra, immediately you say dictator, you think of evil dictator.
Oh, I know certain dictators who are delighted to be called dictators, who relish the title.
No, but that's the problem with dictatorship, right? In order to have someone in that position, a dictator, you create rules, the constitution, laws, whatever it is.
Right.
So when you elect a dictator who's good, they might carry out their job well. Once this person, no one's going to live forever. No one, you know, not even Mugabe. Another person comes in into that role and does not share the same values and abuse their power. Then that's the problem. It's not the person, it's the position. The abuse of that power that comes with that position, with this absolute power. If a good person has it, they will do a lot of good.
Yeah, you've just given me an idea for a live and learn about the psychology of dictators. It would be interesting, wouldn't it? I mean, what really goes on in the mind of a person who believes that they know better than everybody else in their country, and that their word is, for the lack of a better word, is gospel.
And I mean, I don't know. I mean, Mugabe is too controversial for me. he tainted his own reputation, I think.
He did. And I think he was, at the end of the day, in 2017, he was more or less forced from power. He held on for as long as possible. But he was forced. Of course, all throughout this discussion, we have not touched on his wife, Grace Mugabe, who herself requires a daily digest of her own, I think. She was quite an interesting character. But we'll save that for another day.
You can keep the conversation going. You can tweet us at BFM Radio. You can WhatsApp 018-789-8899. Or you can even send them to us via Facebook at BFM The Bigger Picture.
Don't go anywhere. We'll do a quick wrap up of today's show right after Everybody Wants to Rule the World by Tears for Fears.
The Bigger Picture on BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
BFM 89.9 is the Daily Digest with Tina, Sue, and Sumitra. On the show today, World Suicide Prevention Day, we spoke with Azru Muhammad Khalib about better media reporting on suicide.
And we also spoke a little bit about, oh, not a little bit, a lot about the mixed legacy of Robert Mugabe, Zimbabwe's strongman, prime minister slash president slash everything who passed away. President for life, who passed away recently at the age of 95.
So we were asking you on Twitter, was he an evil dictator or a revolutionary hero? So we have one comment from Shi Xian Li. So putting him in a similar light to Ian Douglas Smith.
Yeah, Ian Douglas Smith was the 7th or 8th prime minister of then Rhodesia. It wasn't Zimbabwe yet. He was a white Rhodesian. And I think he was a farmer, if I'm not mistaken, who worked his way up through the ranks. And he was a highly controversial figure. He did serve as the leader of the opposition while Robert Mugabe was in power. They were both highly critical of each other. They both had mixed legacies. And depending who you ask, they're either heroes or villains.
Right. So it was a matter of choosing the lesser of two evils for the people of Zimbabwe.
I don't know if that's a matter of less here at all.
Anyway, if you miss any part of the show, you can download the podcast from bfm.my/dailydigest, from our BFM app or from Spotify. Coming up is Earth Matters with Juliet Jacobs, a Malaysia Day special on the proposed Papa Dam project in Sabah. That's at 3 p.m. Meanwhile, that's all from us on the Daily Digest. We'll leave you with something from Carol, Bad Water, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.